It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, a very special podcast. We have a very special guest, right, Bubba?
No, we do. We're going to be catching up with Phil Steele this time of year. There's obviously so much excitement with football season just around the corner, and people are grabbing their preview magazines off the shelf or downloading their digital versions, as a lot of people do now. And one of the best out there is certainly Phil Steele's. So we're very much looking forward to that visit with Phil here in just a few minutes.
It's going to be great. And by the way, folks, we'll try to see if we can have maybe a preview magazine show. We're working on that. And also, don't forget Friday Morning Football, looking like July the 19th, live from Giddy Up Coffee House in Williamston. And so that's going to be a lot of stuff. This will give you kind of an idea of what July is all about, with a lot of previews. We're getting ready for football and very excited about it. And speaking of football, by the way, Kyle from LaGrange Barber is going to be joining us a little later with the Phil Steele interview. But, Bubba, while we have a chance for the roundtable, let's talk about football. East Carolina's got a couple more commits since we last did our podcast.
Yeah, Coach Houston and staff have reeled in two more commits to 15 now. Tough to keep track with so many committing over the last 2 or 3 weeks. But we are at 15, and we plan on signing 25, according to what I've heard from Stephen Igo and others. So the two most recent commitments, we've got a JUCO product out of Lewisburg, a defensive end, Elijah Robinson. I think he's about 6'4", 250. He's a guy who was in our big man camp recently for offensive and defensive linemen. So those respective coaches, Coach Shank and company, Coach Hansen had the opportunity to see what Elijah was all about, how he moves, and so forth. And I know that coach there at Lewisburg, obviously, he's a little biased, but at the same time, he was talking about what a tremendous prospect Elijah Robinson is for the Pirates. And then we also got a wide receiver, which is our first offensive skill commit in this class thus far. And it's a guy, Tyler Savage, from the state of Virginia. And it's a guy that Drew Dudzik, one of our wide receiver coaches, our outside wide receivers coach, had a previous relationship with from James Madison and had been recruiting for 2+ years. So as you know, recruiting is largely about the relationships. And so that one is one that paid off in a big time way with Drew Dudzik landing that commit from Tyler Savage, a 6'3 wide receiver. He also had offers from Temple and App State. Thus, and he had at least 10 plus offers, but his FBS offers to clarify were from Temple and App State.
You know, Bub, I wanted to chime in on Savage. You know, Tyler Savage, I saw Stephen Igo, and there's a video on, I know, Twitter and social media where he announced where he was going to go to school. Very cool idea, very well produced. Really love it. If you haven't had a chance to see it yet, folks, I don't know if you just type Tyler Savage or how you would find it, but it's an excellent, some of the folks I know, our listeners, are well-educated in the social media universe and also just in general about Pirate Nation and about Pirate sports, but also probably in life as well. But yeah. Great, great video. Awesome. Stephen Igo, I think he had retweeted. He had a thing about it. So make sure that if you get a chance, folks, see that. It's really awesome. And glad to have Tyler Savage aboard for the 2020 class.
Yeah, a huge addition. Literally and figuratively, but nice to have a good sized wide receiver like that, and it's awesome to see how this class is shaping up thus far. Coach Houston and staff are about 60% of the way there toward their 25 hopeful commits prior, and they hope to have that pretty much locked up by the start of the season, excuse me. Kind of shifting gears and talking a little Pirate baseball. We have 9 Pirates performing well in different summer leagues. And of course, kind of leading the way, the one you've heard the most about is, of course, Burley, Alec Burleson. He's with the USA Collegiate National Team. Last year we had Pack and Agnos in addition to head coach Cliff Godwin with that USA collegiate national team. And now, Burley has made that 26-man roster. Last year, a lot of those games were played on U.S. soil, and then there will be some this year played on U.S. soil, but there will be even more played. I believe they have games, I want to say it's Thailand and then maybe Tokyo, but a lot of those games are going to be played abroad this year. So a little bit more about some of the Pirates performing well in the various summer leagues. You have Dusty Baker. I believe he's in the CPL because he was on the CPL select team that played the USA Collegiate National Team. Dusty's hitting the ball very well, batting over 300, and has three home runs with more than 10 driven in. You also have Thomas Francisco, who's hitting above 450, and he has a few doubles and really playing good baseball. And then you also have a guy in Bryson Worrell who had a strong start of the season and then really came on at the end of the season, hit a couple of mammoth shots in the Greenville Regional, one from the right hand side and one from the left hand side. And so Bryson Worrell, we heard time and again from Coach Godwin, Stephen Igo, and others that know this baseball program so well, how much talent that young man has.
A local kid, and I believe Bryson's from Sims, North Carolina, I want to say.
Yes.
So yep. Sims, North Carolina, which is right near Wilson for people in Wilson County, for people that don't know where Sims, North Carolina, know it very well. And if you come, it's Pirate Nation, if you come to the Pirate Games to Greenville, it's one of the exits right before Wilson, like the last exit before Wilson, heading on 264 East if you're heading to Greenville. So I tell you, Bryson, the future is bright for Cliff Godwin. A lot of great arms, a lot of great bats, my friend.
Oh, it most definitely is. Like we've talked, we're certainly reloading, not rebuilding by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, we lost some very, very talented pieces in Spencer Brickhouse, Bryant Packer, Jake Agnos, et cetera. But we have guys coming in or guys already on campus that will pick up the slack. And speaking of that, how much talent do we have on hand? We have enough that Eric Sorensen, who's one of the D1 baseball writers, picked us as one of his 8 for Omaha in 2020. So that gives you an idea of what the outside perception is of this program and some of the talent that Coach Godwin, Coach Palumbo, Roselle, et cetera, have stockpiled here over the last several seasons. So in addition to that, kind of another baseball note, a former Pirate commit, a guy, Mackenzie Gore, and he went second overall here a couple years ago with the Padres. And Mackenzie, and he's in, I believe it's high A ball now, and he's performing very well with the Lake Elsinore Storm. In 72 and a third innings, he is 7-1 with a 1.12 ERA. So just remarkable numbers there from Mackenzie Gore. And in 72 and a third innings, he has struck out 101. So that's awesome to see. Hate that he couldn't pitch in the purple and gold, but certainly understood why he did what he did. And it's great to see that young man from Whiteville and a guy that Turner Brown played with back in high school having so much success with the Padres organization. And can't wait to see him pitching the big leagues down the road. But something else, when I think about Mackenzie Gore, I think about that patented high leg kick that's so fluid with his motion. And anybody that has seen Mackenzie Gore pitch, be it in person or just a video on YouTube or what have you, certainly knows what I'm talking about. But that's something else that I thought was worth mentioning in that performance that he had. Those numbers earned him the spot on the cover of Baseball America in their most recent edition. And, Dave, one more note about baseball. As far as recruiting goes, when the Pirates received the commitment for the 2022 class, yes, so a young man who just completed his freshman season in high school, a guy by the name of Colby Thorndike. He is from Fairmont High School, which is not too far from Lumberton, North Carolina. So he's a corner infielder, And from everything that I've seen and heard, that's what he is, a young man that can really hit the baseball. And so he's someone that the Pirates have committed for that 2022 class.
Great to hear that. And you know what, that speaks volumes. If you want to know how successful your program is and how you should be judged, a freshman verbally committing, I mean, after his freshman season, unheard of. You understand why you have to do it now with top talent like that. You want to go ahead and get locked them and on the board, so to speak. So that just speaks volumes about how everybody thinks I'm a cheerleader for ECU, Cliff Godwin, apologist, whatever. That coaching staff works their butts off. There's a reason why we're growing, why we're a good program, going to now great, because of Cliff Godwin and his leadership. And my tip my hat is I always do to that program because of all the things they're doing across the board. So great job by them.
Oh, no doubt about it. And Dave, why don't we go to our interview? And right now we're going to catch up with what most people consider to be college football's top prognosticator. And we're going to talk to Phil Steele, of course, of the Phil Steele College Football Preview magazine. And let's chat with him right now.
Well, this time of year with preseason upon us, it's always a great time to talk football. And guys, you know, I love preseason magazines, but this next guest has got to be the best, right, Bubba?
Yeah, this time of the year, with all the excitement of the upcoming season, you're thinking about the preview magazines, and the most successful down through the years is Phil Steele. And Phil, welcome to the show.
Hey, appreciate you having me on, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Doing fantastic. We love talking football. We wanted to have you on because we're very excited. I know you had a chance to talk to our head coach of Mike Houston, East Carolina. A lot of excitement in Greenville, and we wanted to have you on because we're even more excited this year about football season.
Yeah, and it's been a little bit of a dry spell. You go back to the Ruffin McNeil era, I thought things were going along smoothly. Then one bad year, and Ruffin was out the door, and the Scotty Montgomery era started, and it didn't go too well. Three straight three-win seasons, that's not what Pirate fans' expectations are each year. I do think Mike Houston coming in is a big plus. I think he's a guy that's going to get this ship righted in the short term, and he's a man with a plan. So I like Coach Houston. I think he's going to do a good job there. And, you know, if you're a reader of the magazine, you guys got to like the fact that we give you more coverage. We give the same amount of coverage on East Carolina that everybody else does on Alabama and Oklahoma, two full pages. Any other magazines give you that amount of coverage?
No, Phil, and it's funny you mentioned that. I was thinking about that last night going through your magazine. There's so much information in there. It is impossible to read that whole thing. And, you know, I've often wondered why Athlon and Lindy's and some of your competitors don't do that. I mean, why would you want to alienate anybody, include everyone, give everybody the same amount of coverage? You're going to sell more magazines.
That's right.
I noticed you had us just outside your most improved teams list. And there was one other list I noticed. I'm sorry, you've got so many things. I don't have your magazine in front of me. There was one other list you had us on. Cannot think of it right now. Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, there's actually two other lists that I had East Carolina on. One was the going up box for the toughest schedule. In other words, the schedule got easier this year. And the second one would be my turnovers equals turnaround, because East Carolina was minus 14 in turnovers last year. And that, believe it or not, guys, this is the 25th year of the magazine. That was my first article, my first analytic article I wrote was turnovers equals turnaround in that first magazine back in 1995. And it's proven true to form 75% of the time. Teams that have positive double-digit turnovers one year get a weaker record the next year. And those that had negative double-digit turnovers, like East Carolina did, have a more positive record the next year. And it's worked 75% of the time throughout the 25 years of the magazine. So if you're a Pirate fan, you could take those two charts to heart.
Yeah, a lot of averages, things tend to equal out with turnovers. Another thing, and then we'll move on from the Pirates unless you guys have something else to throw out about East Carolina. You have us picked the fifth in the East of the American, but in your write-up, you did say, you know, you think we have a chance if things go our way to make a bowl game. So I guess, you know, things go right, maybe third or fourth in the East.
Potential is there. I mean, you take a look. You know, I watched the USF game last year as an example. I thought East Carolina was a better team pretty much throughout the entire game. 24-9 first down edge, 412-296 yard edge, yet somehow, some way, ended up losing that game. But that shows that there's not much of a difference between USF and Houston, and and East Carolina. And with East Carolina, last year they were number 125 on my experience chart. This year they're all the way up at number 31. It's going to be a different type of offense. I think East Carolina's got an offense where they're going to run the football more. Holt Naylor is probably the perfect QB for that. He's got great size, can run well for his size. He's a really good athlete. And I think that's going to help the offense. When you run the football more, you keep the defense off the field, and it's just an all-around help. Plus, you remember a couple of games last year that East Carolina lost, going back to that turnovers. You know, the turnovers were a major factor in games, much like the UCF game, minus five in turnovers, and the USF game. I don't know if it was necessarily turnovers, but it was just one of those strange games.
Yeah, it really was. That was a game that we really think on this year's schedule, and with that being at Dowdy-Sicklin, that the Pirates can certainly win.
Absolutely, and it could be one of the key games to EC getting to a bowl game, because when you look at the schedule, Gardner Webb, William and Mary, a couple of games that they're going to be favored in. Old Dominion, a winnable game on the road. Now, ODU's tough, especially at home, but I think East Carolina will likely be favored in that game. At Connecticut, yeah, I'm going to favor East Carolina in that. This is a five-year building project for Connecticut, and their defense, even if they improved huge this year on defense, it'd still be one of the weakest in college football. And then the Tulsa game, where the bowl game may revolve around that Tulsa game at the end of the season. And Tulsa's a team where, watch out for these guys, going over the defense with Coach Montgomery like I did, I think their defense can be a lot better than what you would expect out of Tulsa. And they were a hard-hit team, much like EC last year. Tulsa had a couple games where they led into the fourth quarter and then ended up losing them late. I think South Florida got them in the same fashion as well.
You mentioned Old Dominion. ODU is a team that interests me, regional opponent. I noticed in your magazine, I hadn't realized this during Keeping Up Recruiting, they took 14 junior college players. How often do you see that, looking at teams with 14 JUCOs?
It's rare, and it depends on the recruiting class and what's available out there, I think. But, yeah, it's a pretty high number, especially for Bobby Wilder. He's been using a lot of freshmen in his tenure. So, you know, and you guys are familiar with the defensive coordinator for Old Dominion this year. It's going to be David Blackwell, who I thought did a good job, especially the first half of the year last year. I thought EC had a good defense the first half of the year. When the season went awry at the end of the year, the defense went out the window as well.
Phil, moving on to take a look at the American. Of course, it's been about UCF the last couple seasons, and the Knights 25-1 under Scott Frost and then Josh Heupel. And then on the west side of things, and you have Memphis with Mike Norvell and the tremendous job he's done picking up where Justin Fuente left off. So talk a little bit about those clubs, because I know they're at the top of your G5 teams this year to vie for that Selection Six Bowl.
Yeah, and I think if either team runs the table this year, then they definitely will be that top team to get into the Group of Five New Year's Day Bowl. I don't know if any team is going to survive the Group of Five unbeaten this year, because when I look at Memphis, they're the team that I have up there number one. They've got Brady White back at quarterback. They've got eight starters back off the defense, and the defense played pretty well last year. I remember their games against UCF. Both times they blew big leads against UCF and came up short on the scoreboard. But when you look at Memphis this year, they do lose Henderson and off the offense, but Patrick Taylor is back. John Pop Williams is back, a receiver, and as mentioned, eight starters back on D, and they play my number 111 schedule. They will likely be favored in their first nine games easily, be playing good ball. The biggest concerns I have are at Houston, at USF, could be very winnable, and that Cincinnati game might even be a preview of the AAC title game. It's going to be a big one at the end of the year. And with UCF, eight starters back on offense. They lose a dynamic quarterback in Mackenzie Milton, who they were pushing for the Heisman last year and really was the straw that stirred the drink. Brandon Winbush, though, is not a bad replacement. Adrian Killen's back at running back. Defensively, they only have five starters back, but had an underrated defense last year as well. Now, they've got a five-game stretch where they have to play Florida Atlantic on the road, Stanford at home, at Pitt, and forget the Connecticut game, at Cincinnati. Those three road games in 4 or 5 weeks and the Stanford game, if they come out of that unscathed, then I think UCF's got a great shot running the table and being that New Year's team. But I'll throw one other team out there, and that's Cincinnati. Love the job that Luke Fickell is doing with the Bearcats. He's got seven starters back on offense, seven on D. secondary that's got Kobe Bryant at corner, James Wiggins at free safety. He's got one of the best punters in the country in James Smith, Desmond Ridder at quarterback, the running back core of Warren, Doakes, and Thomas. And they get that UCF game at home. That might be the key to deciding the AAC East this year.
Go ahead,
Colin. Sorry.
All right. Sorry about that, Bubba. Phil, I want to step outside of the American for a moment and talk about a former conference mate of East Carolina. You know, a lot of East Carolina fans keep up with old Conference USA foes, and one of my favorite teams to follow is Southern Miss. USM this year, I noticed, I believe they were number 6 in your experience chart, and you haven't picked to win the West. Southern Miss's defense was phenomenal last year, but their offense was dreadful. They turned the ball over a lot and just couldn't score. I think if their offense is improved with that defense they have, they could be special.
And I'm in agreement with you. Going over the team with Coach Hobson this year, when we went down the defense, I got off the phone, I said, well, there's your best defense in CUSA. I mean, you know, players like DQ Thomas at nickelback, Ty Williams at corner, Hemby at free safety. They are loaded with 6 starters back, but they're probably even more experienced than that. You know, they do lose just 9 Lettermen off the defensive side of the ball. And offensively, you got to think there's going to be improvement. 10 starters are back. Abraham's back at QB. He's an accurate passer. He's cerebral, intelligent, and mechanically he throws the ball well. Now, he's not going to throw the ball 100 yards down the field, but I think he's a good fit for the offense. And, you know, as you mentioned, they need to not turn the ball over like they did last year. And I think Abraham will get that corrected, improve upon his 15-10 ratio. So this is a team where I think when you look at the West, guys, Southern Miss, I've got them an underdog in 2 games, at Louisiana Tech, at Florida Atlantic. UAB, I've got them an underdog in 2 games, at Southern Miss, at North Texas. North Texas, got an underdog in 2 games, at Louisiana Tech, at Southern Miss, and Louisiana Tech 2 games, Marshall and UAB. I actually have all 4 teams tying for the West, but I think Southern Miss is the one that ends up breaking the tiebreaker and coming out the winner. And when in doubt, I always go with the best defense, and Southern Miss is loaded on that side of the ball.
Phil, we've already talked about Memphis, UCF, and Cincinnati. Those are 3 of your top 5 non-P5 schools this year. You also have FAU that's looking for a bounce back in year 3, Lane Kiffin, and of course you have DeAndre Francois coming in there, and then you also have Boise State, who's always strong. Brian Harsin having done nothing but continue and build upon the success of Chris Peterson, but then also in the Mountain West, something that needs to be mentioned is what Jeff Tedford's done at Fresno State, his alma mater. And he took over a 1-11 program, and all he's done is go 10-4, 12-2 the last 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the first thing that surprised me a little bit was that Francois actually changed his mind. He's not going to be going to Florida Atlantic this year. That came out about a week ago, so it was after the magazine came out. But I still am very high on FAU. I love the bounce-back teams. Sort of like the stock market indicator that I have in the magazine shows you that teams that take a dip, an unexpected dip, usually bounce back and bounce back big. And I still think FAU can win their division. They get Marshall at home, which is going to be a key game for them. Now, you know, you took out to the Mountain West there, and you touched on it. Boise is a team that this could be Brian Harsin's best team. I know he loses his quarterback, but I'm projecting a true Frosch and Hank Bachmeyer to step in there and potentially win the job and be the next 4-year starter at QB. It worked well with Brett Rippon, who started as a true freshman. So I'm thinking they could go that respect. But you look at them, offensive line, they've got 3 NFL-caliber offensive linemen there, and that's going to help the new quarterback. And also, Boise can win on the road, and their road games this year, Utah State winnable, but UNLV, San Jose, Colorado State, all winnable category, which means they get the toughest teams at home, and we're talking about Air Force. But you go to Jeff Tedford in Fresno State, and wow, if you flip to my magazine back in the awards section, you see that my national coach of the year last year was Jeff Tedford. And Fresno became the first team in NCAA history to go from double-digit losses in one season to back-to-back double-digit win seasons. And last year, they were, they've been fairly experienced the last 2 years. This year, they dropped to number 129. So it's going to be interesting to see what Fresno can do. They only have 9 returning starters overall, but it's interesting talking to Coach Tedford. Last year, they lost their defensive coordinator. I said, wow, I mean, your defense was so improved under him. I really wonder what's going to happen. Now he's like, you know what? We planned for people to leave. So they had plans, and they had the assistant assistant coaches, and guess what? Their defense was even better last year. So despite having just nine starters back, I really have great respect for Coach Tedford as the head guy, and I think he's going to have Fresno contending. Now, they do have to play San Diego State on the road this year, and I believe they also pull Boise. No, they don't pull Boise. I just looked at the schedule. But they play San Diego State on the road this year, and that's the reason that I picked them second in the West.
Phil, we hate to be all over the place, but your magazine covers it all. I want to get back here regionally in the Carolinas where most of our listener base is. Can you talk about what do you think about the ACC schools in the Carolinas and Appalachian State there in the Sun Belt?
You know, and the ACC, naturally, Clemson's your huge favorite this year. And Clemson's a team that probably be a 17-point favorite or more in every single game they play. But for the North Carolina teams that are in there, you know, NC State, the biggest question mark, comes at the quarterback position. They also lose 2,000-yard receivers and 1,000-yard rushers. So you'll wonder about them. But remember last year, they lost all those guys to the NFL, and much a similar conversation as I had with Tedford with Coach Dorn last year going over the defensive line. I go, wow, Coach, you're in big trouble. He's like, you know what? I like the players. I think we'll be pretty good. And look at North Carolina State's defense last year. They actually went from allowing 25.2 points per game to 24.9 despite losing all those defensive linemen. So despite losing their quarterback, 1,000-yard rusher, and 2,000-yard receivers, I think Dave Dorn will have this team good, not as potent, but pretty close offensively, and they have a threat to move up a little bit in the Atlantic. I've got them tied for third right now in the Atlantic Division. Then Wake Forest is a team where Dave Clawson's just doing a great job every year, and every year he needles me because I never pick Wake to make it to the bowls, and this year I finally did for him. He said, you know, I'm still waiting for the year you pick us, and you look at Wake this year. They've got seven returning starters on offense, five on defense. Newman is back at quarterback, along with Hartman. I like the running back core with Kearney and Beal Smith. And defensively, there's some pretty good players there, like Bassey, a cornerback, I think could be one of the an NFL-caliber corner. And Wake always overachieves my expectations, so I would think that Wake does indeed get back to a bowl game this year. Now, with North Carolina, they're a team that Mack Brown steps into a pretty good situation, because if it could go wrong, it went wrong with North Carolina the last 2 years. How about that 2-9 season? Last year they had the suspensions prior to the season. Sort of reminds me a little bit of what happened to Florida 2 years ago. Florida had those suspensions, ended up losing a bunch of games they didn't deserve to lose, but they were depleted, then they suffered injuries. Same thing happened in North Carolina. Well, what happened to Florida? They bounced back. They went from 4-7 all the way up to number 7 in the country. I expect North Carolina to bounce back. Now, not number 7 in the country, but they will flirt with a bowl bid this year, and hopefully they can keep their quarterbacks healthy. It seemed like every time a quarterback stepped up and had a good game, he got injured. If they keep their QBs healthy, I like the talent, especially Crawford and Strobridge up front on the defensive line. Now, Duke had a very experienced team last year. This year they dropped to just 12 returning starters, and they lose an NFL first-round draft pick at quarterback. Sort of reminds me when Cutcliffe was at Tennessee. He lost Peyton Manning, brings in his replacement, more of a running quarterback in T. Martin, and they still did well. He adapts the offense. He'll adapt the offense to fit Quentin Harris. The defense will still be solid. I thought Duke underachieved last year, which makes them a little bit on the dangerous side for this year. And then if you're looking for the prime-time team in the Sun Belt, it's got to be App State. I mean, App State has got a new head coach, which concerns me a little, but there's plenty of talent. Zach Thomas at quarterback, Darrington Evans at running back, Corey Sutton at receiver. The offensive line, clearly one of the best in the Sun Belt. And defensively, you know, when you return six starters and most of the key players, like Davis Gaither at linebacker, Josh Thomas at safety, Franklin at safety, they only allowed 15.5 points per game, and I thought they were far and away the best team in the Sun Belt last year. Even if they take a slight step back with the new head coach learning the new offense, or with the players learning new offense, defense, and coaches learning the players, I think they're still the cream of the crop of the Sun Belt Conference.
Yeah, and their new head coach, to me, much like Mike Houston at East Carolina, seems like the right fit with his ties to North Carolina coming from NC State, and his Group of Five ties at Boise State prior to NC State. Bubba, have you got anything else?
Yeah, so Phil, while we were talking about a lot of the ACC programs, I noticed how you have a big turnaround projected for Willie Taggart and the Seminoles down at Florida State. So talk about them, and I know you project them to be right there, not necessarily contending with Clemson, but second in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, and I'll give you a little history on the most improved team list in my magazine. Last year, my number one most improved team was Florida, and they went from 4-7 to number 7. And I only put teams that are off a losing record on my most improved list. So I've been writing the magazine for 25 years. I have not been able to put Florida State on that list once because their last losing season was 1976. But I could finally put the Seminoles on there. So I put them on there as my number 3 most improved team in the country. I love it when a team has that potential for a bounce back. And they've got 16 returning starters this year. You know, talking to Coach Taggart last year prior to the season, he was really high on Kalen Laybourne, a running back, and then he goes and gets injured second week of the year, and they had all kinds of things happen during the course of the year, and it really snowballed into an ugly season. Now, I will have Coach Taggart on my hot seat list, but for the record, I think he gets off there rather quickly. I like the depth of this year's squad. This is a team that looks good coming off the bus. Biggest question mark is the question mark for Florida State the last few years, which is the offensive line. But all the other positions, extremely solid, and I think the schedule sets up better as well. So they're my number 3 most improved team in the country. I've got them finishing 2nd in the ACC Atlantic, and Coach Taggart feels that the players are now bought in. He knows the players inside and out. The players that are still there are bought into the program, and I think you're going to see a completely different Florida State team on the field this year.
Do you know if, talking to Coach Taggart, is he going to let Kendall Briles have full control of that offense?
Yeah, he definitely will. And Kendall Briles is a perfect guy to put in charge of that. I think Briles has done a good job everywhere he has been as an offensive coordinator, and I think he's got talent to work with.
Phil, I also wanted to ask you nationally, and I know Nebraska is your number one most improved team, and that wasn't a huge surprise to me. Obviously, they got it going late in the year last year under Coach Frost. So talk a little bit about the Huskers, and then one that did – surprised me a little more was the Miami Hurricanes. Manny Diaz, after being the head coach at Temple for a week and a half, came back to his roots there in South Beach. And so talk about what you see for the Hurricanes.
Yeah, I'll start with Nebraska. And, you know, Nebraska is a team where Scott Frost inherited a pass-happy offense and then tried to incorporate the spread offense. And it took some time. They averaged 23 points per game the first 6 games. But over the last 6 games, 37 points per game. So I like that. I like the fact Adrian Martinez is there. It's now the 2nd year of the switch of the offense, so the players are going to be better acclimated to it. They still have a guy like J.D. Spielman, a receiver, outstanding left tackle like Brendan Jameis. So I think they're going to be good offensively. And defensively, it's not the black shirt defense. They've given up over 430 yards per game the last 2 years, but I think they'll be an improved defense. And so with Nebraska, you know, they have Michigan and Michigan State drop off the schedule. They also avoid Penn State a second straight year. And last year, they gave Ohio State everything they wanted in Columbus, and now they get them at home. And then the biggest thing, I think the West is a wide-open division. They get the 3 toughest teams. I'm talking about Iowa, Wisconsin, Northwestern, all at home. I've actually got Nebraska going from 4-8 to winning the Big Ten West this year, so very high on them. And with Miami, generally when you get a new head coach, there's always a learning curve. They've got to learn the players' strengths and weaknesses. Players have to learn new systems. But in Miami's case, that learning curve is not there. Manny Diaz, despite his long tenure at Temple, has been at Miami the last 4 years. And his defense, there was no problem with the defense last year. They gave up 279 yards per game, 19.5 points per game. They've got 6 starters back, including the 3 linebackers that have been there forever. I'm talking about Pinckney, Quarterman, McLeod. Bandy's back as a star shutdown corner. And Bubba Bolden is added from USC. So this is a very talented top-10 defense. Offensively, when I talked to Coach Diaz, one of the team with him, he was extremely high on the hire of offensive coordinator Dan Enos. He thinks he's going to come in and do a good job. And, you know, defensive coordinators usually have a pretty good feel for offensive coordinators because they have to take them on. And he was extremely high on Enos. I think they get better play out of their quarterbacks. How can they not? 50% completions last year, basically, 14 interceptions. Tate Martell, Nico Superi, whoever wins the job, I think it'll be Martell. Should have a better year, make their offense at least a slightly above average and go along with the top-10 defense. And a schedule where, you know, they play North Carolina on the road September 7th. They don't go on the road again until October the 26th. It's a good schedule, one I rate number 69 in the country, and I'm actually picking Miami to win the Coastal and get to the ACC title game.
Phil, that's great stuff. We really appreciate your time. You've been very generous. And before we let you go, will you go ahead and tell people how to follow you on Twitter and where they can pick up your magazine?
I appreciate that. The magazine's 352 pages, gives you 3 to 4 times the amount of information. And as mentioned, if you're an East Carolina fan, you have to pick one up. 2 full pages, I give you the same amount of coverage on East Carolina that I do on Oklahoma and Alabama. You can get it right now at Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Books A Million, CVS, Target, Walgreens, Public, places like that. You can also go to the website, which is philsteele.com. That's S-T-E-E-L-E.com, S-T-E-E-L-E.com. And when you go there, you can go to the store and pick up the copy, the hard copy, or go to Digital Magazines up in the upper left-hand corner. And when you go to Digital Magazines, it'll show you how you can sign up for it on your iPad, your iPhone, your Android device, your Kindle device, or even your computer. And once you buy it on one of those, you get them on all. So that's philsteele.com. And finally, give me a follow on Twitter. It's at philsteele042, at philsteele042.
Phil, we really appreciate it.
Thank you, Phil.
I grabbed my copy of Books A Million the other day, and I've already dove in head first, and great stuff, and we certainly look forward to having you back on down the road during the season.
Sounds great. Great talking Pirate football with you guys today. Really had a lot of fun.
Appreciate Phil Steele very much. My gosh, that's one of the biggest guests we've had. We've had a lot of great ones. That's a huge one. Appreciate his time so much. And, you know, Bubba, I was disappointed with the interview, not because of Phil. I was disappointed because, obviously, that's kind of the interview you're enjoying so much. And then when you want to, like, energize the bunny, you want to keep going and going. But we obviously wanted to respect his time and not overstay our welcome, so to speak. So thank you, Phil, and I'm sure we'll have him back on. And I know we have Antonio Castro coming on from the Phil Steele Magazine, folks. He's the editor of, I believe it was this Big Ten and American, right, Bubba?
Yep, Antonio does a tremendous job, and he covers the American, the Big Ten, and then also I think he covers the Big 12 as well.
That's right, it's Big 12, it's the Bigs and American, so which is big. But anyway, he was fantastic with us last year, coming on, kind of giving us a little bit of a preview for Phil Steele. Phil came on, plus we have that, and a reminder, folks, again, about Friday Morning Football coming up Friday, the July 19th, live from Giddy Hub Coffee House in Williamston. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be fantastic. We're working on things behind the scenes. I'm just really excited about it, Bubba.
Yep, that will be an awful lot of fun talking football. It's 3 different levels. We'll touch on area high school teams and even across the state of North Carolina, as we did a year ago, with a very thorough preview of the East and the West. But we'll also talk college football, not only FBS, but we'll dip in and we'll probably take a look at the Division II programs in our state as well. And then we'll also talk, of course, some NFL football with the Carolina Panthers, Washington Redskins, and otherwise.
Very excited about that. So, again, mark your calendars down, folks. Friday Morning Football, July the 19th, live from Giddy Up Coffee House in Williamston. And, by the way, folks, Giddy Up is awesome. Laura Lynn, the owner, she has locations in Washington and Williamston. So our good friends like Pirate Al that's in Washington, the original Washington. Some people say Little Washington. I love it very much. Great waterfront there. Make sure you check out Giddy Up in Washington and Williamston. We're going to be from the Williamston location. I literally could walk there, very close there, about 2 or 3 blocks away from that, from the coffee house, one of my favorite hangouts. Bubba, we could talk about it a long time, but we'll have that coming up in a couple weeks. Let's talk now about college football. I just want to get your thoughts on the college football landscape. You know, there were so many questions I had, but again, and I know the same thing with Kyle and yourself that we could ask, but what were your takeaways and maybe some things that you want to talk about with college football coming up? It's a couple months away.
Yeah, when you look at the national landscape, of course, you're going to talk about Alabama, Clemson, Georgia. One of Phil Steele's Final Four teams is Michigan, and I think that's probably a pretty good pick. So they do have a new offensive coordinator in Josh Gattis, but they have an experienced quarterback in Shea Patterson coming back. And, of course, you had the coaching change down in Columbus. So with the Buckeyes having had Michigan's number a lot in recent years, to say the least, I really think this could be the year that Michigan kind of kicks that door down and beats the Buckeyes and busts its way into the college football playoff for the first time under Jim Harbaugh.
I really like Harbaugh, and I think he's a fantastic coach. And I don't know the circumstances there in Ann Arbor, but I get what it means to be Big Blue as far as, like, that's a really big deal. That's a really big coaching job. It's your alma mater. You know, some people may say it's fair criticism. I don't know. And you always hear about how coaches get too much credit, too much blame. But I think if you got to listen to Phil Steele on that. I think that I know this understatement of the century to say that Michigan is due, but I do think that they are, that Harbaugh's done a nice job building the program. And sometimes things take time. Sometimes things take longer than you expect. It could happen here at East Carolina as well with Mike Houston. We don't know that yet. I'm not negative Nelly. I'm just saying you don't know what's going to happen until you play the games and go through that. And sometimes it takes a little bit longer. So we'll see how it turns out. But I do think that's a sexy pick, a surprise pick. But then, yeah, it really shouldn't be a surprise if you think about Harbaugh has been a winner everywhere he's been.
No doubt about it. Something else that stood out from the interview and just his magazine in general is Phil picking Memphis to actually be the Group of Five's top team instead of UCF. He has UCF number two. And Memphis is, I mean, they've been very solid in recent years, winning, I think it's 8-10 and then 8 games. So 26 total wins over the last 3 seasons under Mike Norvell since he came over from Arizona State and took over for Justin Fuente. But with what Norvell has continued on there in Memphis and added to, I could see that pick for sure. And it would be good for the league for sure to see us get back to another New Year's Six bowl game. And he had Memphis playing Tom Herman in the Texas Longhorns out in the Cotton Bowl.
I thought that was the pick of the West last year. But, you know, the funny thing is, Bubba, you think about this, how crazy is it? You want to talk about a team, I think the UCF has overshadowed as Memphis. When you look at the year before last, that American Championship game was off the charts. But just the fact that when you have a team like UCF that has that miracle run over the last 2 seasons, 25-1, I don't think we really soaked that up about how big a deal that was over the last 2 seasons. And I think the team like Memphis, they're being overshadowed a little bit. What I mean by that is their success has been a lot bigger than what people realize, because you have a team like UCF and Orlando that's going 25-1 over 2 seasons. So that's not something that happens every day. Mike Norvell, I think, is a tremendous coach. I really like him a lot. And we're going to try to get Peter Edmiston back on for local Memphis radio there. Does an excellent job. And I think that we'll find out more about that. And also maybe we can talk about basketball recruiting. Number one in the country with Penny Hardaway. Who knew? There's a tremendous basketball town. Nobody saw the number one recruiting class coming, even though you have James Wiseman. But anyway, talking about football, I really like Memphis. And I just think that they've got something special going on there. And Norvell, I don't think, gets enough credit. And it's because, again, of UCF.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's done a heck of a job continuing on and, like I said, adding to and building upon what Justin Fuente got started several years ago. But in addition to that, we touched on a lot of Group of Five programs. And another interesting topic of conversation was what Brian Harsin at Boise State, former Bronco quarterback, and then also Jeff Tedford at his alma mater, Fresno State, what those two coaches have done at their respective alma maters. And obviously Boise State's been strong for years and years, and Brian Harsin has continued that on. And then Jeff Tedford, like we discussed in the interview, took over a 1-11 program, and all he's done is win 22 ball games the last 2 years. And if that name sounds familiar, if you're a diehard college football fan, it should. And that's because he had all those years of success at Cal before the Golden Bears decided to part ways with him a few years ago, and they certainly have not been the same since.
No, they haven't, Bubba. You made a very excellent point there, because Cal was kind of like on the rise and one of those surprise kind of teams. And you're like, wow, not on your radar. All of a sudden they're on your radar. And now they're not on the radar again. And, you know, coaches have sometimes people, you know, we've seen that at East Carolina. We're not getting specifics because we're not talking, that's not the podcast is about, where ADs and coaches don't get along and on and on and on. Administrative people don't get along with coaches and whatever. And next thing you know, they get rid of a coach they shouldn't get rid of, whatever the case may be, or even administrations getting rid of ADs they shouldn't get rid of. We've seen that locally and across the country, crazy stuff like that. And it's a shame because Cal is one of those schools that you would probably would think that they should be better than they are. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And something else that really jumped out at me is not only does he expect Scott Frost to do well at Nebraska this year, he expects them to win the Big Ten West and get into a New Year's Six Bowl. So that was something that really jumped out to me as well.
Yeah, I really like Scott Frost. Obviously, maybe I'm biased because I love the American. He's going back to his alma mater. The way they finished last year, as we talked about a couple times already on the podcast, and I just feel like the guy's a winner. And you've got Nebraska. I'm not saying like we were talking a week or so ago with Nebraska guy. It's not about that they want to win national championship, but at the same time, they should be winning a lot of games and maybe sometimes competing for a national championship. I think that's more fair about the Cornhuskers, and who better to do it than one of the hottest young coaches in America, and he went to Lincoln, to Nebraska. So I really like those. That's one of the storylines. I'll tell you another one, Bubba, that maybe I should have gone to West Point, or maybe I did in a previous life. I always had a lot of respect for Army. Really love what Coach Munkin's doing. I keep hearing over and over again different magazines, different people, including SiriusXM, ESPN, U Radio, how they feel like that Army is going to be one of the top 15 football stories in America. That remains to be seen, but I really like Coach Munkin. He came on our podcast for the Army-Navy game. What a class act, and I tell you what, as long as they have Jeff Munkin there, I know there's good years and bad years, but I don't think they're going to have one of those terrible years, like 1, 2, or 3 wins like they've had in the past.
No, I definitely don't expect anything like that to occur. I mean, sometimes things happen, like Navy's been so consistent under Kenny Matalolo, and that program only won 3 games last year. They had a boatload of injuries from what I recall. So you're going to have years where stuff like that happens. But yeah, I fully expect Army to continue to be a consistent winner. We also, I know podcasts in the past, Kyle has made it very clear how big of a fan he is of Chris Creighton and what he's done at Eastern Michigan, and rightfully so. I'm very interested to see how former Florida coach Jim McElwain, who left there under some a little bit of scrutiny, and I don't know how just or unjust that was, not close enough to the situation and don't know all the information, obviously, but I'm very interested to see how he does in his first season with Central Michigan.
It was very bizarre in Gainesville when that happened. I liked McElwain. I thought he was tremendous coach. I think that was a situation where it's funny you brought that up about how we were just talking about personalities. I don't think he got along with AD. I think that might be speaking of understatement of the century. He doesn't get along with AD, so that's a situation where it's a personality conflict, and sometimes you have to be a big boy and not some of the kids today. College kids say butt hurt. I think the AD is butt hurt about that situation, and so he actually I think that they made a dumb move. However, now they have a great coach, so you can't argue that they downgraded or anything like that. The guy that could they were lucky, they were fortunate because they're Florida, to get the coach they did from Dan Mullen.
Yeah, that was a pretty obvious move. Dan Mullen had been there, of course, under Urban Meyer, and then with what he had built in Starkville, that Mississippi State program was so consistent year in, year out. Dan Mullen was not only known as just a good football coach overall, but Florida had struggled pretty mightily despite Coach McElwain winning the SEC East in consecutive seasons. Their offense had not been what they were accustomed to there in Gainesville. And with Dan Mullen's background and the way he had developed quarterbacks, you saw a tremendous improvement in just an extreme amount of progress with Felipe Franks last season. And so it is going to be very interesting to see how things go in year two of Dan Mullen down there in Gainesville.
It really was. I mean, that Florida is going to be a good program, and I know Kyle said it too. I love Dan Mullen. I think he's a fantastic coach, and they might be – I think we've had people on that said I think they might be a year away from what you can expect, what the expectations are at the Swamp and Gainesville. But you definitely can't argue against them. And, you know, the SEC is tremendous every single year. Bubba, I want to get your take on Phil Steele talking about specifically ACC teams. What did you think about I know listeners love the ACC, so some of them don't. But what did you think about the ACC?
As far as ACC is concerned, I do think his point regarding North Carolina, it had kind of been a perfect storm. And what I mean by that, in terms of the Tar Heels, they had had an awful lot work against them here the last couple years under Larry Fedora, and they were certainly not nearly as bad as their record. But at the same time, it did not surprise me after 3-9 and 2-9 seasons that they pulled the trigger and made a move there. And it didn't surprise me, given the success they had previously under Mack Brown and him, even though he had been out of coaching since, I guess, 2013 or something. He had been out of the business 6-7 years or whatever. So, but with his personality, he seems like the ideal CEO, and he obviously knows the landscape there, even though it's, I'm sure, changed some and since he left more than 20 years ago to go to Texas. But that did not surprise me at all with Mack Brown's return. Also with ACC, and he was talking about the quarterback change that we have in Durham with Duke, yeah, with Daniel Jones moving on to the New York Giants. But with David Cutcliffe and the way he finds a way to win, I really think the Blue Devils will still be in a bowl this year and could surprise some people. As far as NC State, Dave Doran has certainly stockpiled a lot of talent there, as we know, and it'll be interesting to see if he can take any steps, especially given a lot of at least two, maybe more coaching staff changes, a new quarterback, see how they can maybe make a little progress as far as contending with Clemson in the Atlantic Division. And in terms of Wake Forest, David Clawson, Dave Clawson has done just an excellent job wherever he's been as a head coach. He's really known as a program builder, be it at Richmond or Bowling Green, and he did an excellent job those two places, and I thought that was a tremendous hire by Wake Forest when they got him.
Oh, yeah.
And so I fully expect the Deacons to be very competitive as they have been in recent years under Coach Clawson. And as far as the ACC as a whole, you obviously like Clemson in the Atlantic. That goes without saying. And then the Coastal has been kind of up for grabs. The Hokies, yeah, were down a year ago. But I still like the Hokies. They're probably as good as anybody in the Coastal Division. And there are other teams that can certainly be right there and win the Coastal, as we saw with Pittsburgh a season ago, even though they had, I guess, a 7-5 record.
Yeah, the Coastal has been a kind of a carnivore kind of thing where you have, I would argue, probably evenly matched teams, some less than par and then maybe evenly matched. But it remains to be seen. I'll have to look at the rosters and everything, get more educated on Virginia Tech. I know North Carolina's rebuilding. Like you said, Duke felt like as a whole, David Cutcliffe, they underperformed last year. You look at NC State. Well, you're talking about the Coastal itself. You know, look at Bronco Mendenhall with Virginia. There's just a lot of and another thing, surprisingly, was with Willie Taggart in Florida State. He likes them to bounce back. And, you know, this is kind of like one of those things, a do-or-die moment for Taggart. If he doesn't do not only a bowl game, but you're looking at, I would think, at least 8-9 wins to keep his job. I could be wrong on that, but that's my gut feeling in Tallahassee.
Yeah, after going 5-7 and having the first losing season in, 43 years since Bobby Bowden's first year back in 76, definitely need to win 7 or 8 ball games for sure this year. I don't think they would part ways with him at 7-5, but there would certainly be some folks that were pretty unhappy, to say the least, with the success they're accustomed to down there in Tallahassee. But, Dave, you want to promote some of our upcoming content and then go ahead and wrap things up?
Yeah, we can do that. I actually want to talk about, we told you about, of course, about Giddy Up Coffee House, and we're live there for Friday Morning Football, July the 19th. Friday, July 19th. We'd love to have you. in Williamston. Go by and support them. They've been big supporters of this podcast to do the show there. We've been working on with them for a few months now. Thank you, Laura Lynn, and everybody, the whole staff in Washington and Williamston. They have two locations. So if our friends in Williamston, our friends in Washington, please support Giddy Up. They're supporting us, and appreciate them, and a great place to get some coffee. Well, the Sports Objective Watch Party is where we have six episodes where former players will watch the games on YouTube, and what we'll do, we'll let you know ahead of time, and you can watch along as you're listening to the, I guess, listening to the podcast, where you can look at different plays. We'll have highlights of the game, 60 to 90 minutes in length. Obviously, it's not going to be the whole entire game of 3 hours. There wouldn't be commercials anyway, so we'll have that. Of course, we mentioned Friday Morning Football. We also have we need to put that up on social media. We have the dates. Dana, our travel agent, is going to be back in about a week or so, and we're going to put up the podcast. It's a Sports Objective Pirate Cruise from Charleston all the way to the Bahamas. It's a four-day cruise next year, July the 16th to the 20th. Very excited about it. A lot of interest, so we decided to do it. And I'm telling you, folks, it's going to be huge. A lot of great. We may even have some former pirate players. They've expressed interest. We'll see how that goes. But July 16th to the 20th, save those dates for next summer, and we'll give you about 10 months to pay for this event. And we'll have more information with Dana in about a week or so. But we'll try to go ahead and put that up on social media as soon as possible on the Sports Objective page. Okay? So we have that to talk about, and very excited about that. It's going to be a lot of fun. We also have 50 Pirates of 50 Days starting July the 12th all the way up to August the 30th. Very excited about that. We already have been talking to players and just tremendous, tremendous people that wore the purple and gold over the last, 80 years or whatever. It's been a long time. Since the 30s, we'll have, since 1932, I guess it's 87 seasons, something like that. We'll have a lot of great folks, former Pirate players, former Pirate coaches, 50 of them between July the 12th, and they'll also be from August 30th, the day before the game in Raleigh, the kickoff on Friday at noon against NC State. So big time there. Appreciate you so much, as always, for listening. In fact, you can find us anywhere. You listen to your favorite podcast. We're on social media, like our Sports Objective Facebook page. Twitter is at Rich. Actually, I was getting ready to get mine. Mine is Rich McDavid, but it's at the Sports OBJ is for Twitter, and Instagram is at the Sports Objective. We appreciate you so much. We had another record-breaking month, around 4,700 listens. So appreciate you very much. We're not bragging. We just want to. We're surprised and grateful, and just want to give our gratitude to all the listeners out there. And the people listening to this podcast is spreading like wildfire. We've got some great guests coming up. We'll hear from this week alone. We had Phil still to come. We have George Whitfield. We have John Gilbert and Eric Backage. Eric Backage is going to be with us, the Michigan coach. I'll be talking to him about his Pirate days and plus the College World Series. What a great run. Appreciate you so much, as always. For Kyle from LaGrange, Barbara and Bubba Rosenbaum, we'll see you next time. I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.